Blog Talk Radio.
This show is gonna rock. Jamal Khashoggi loved his country and the people of Medina, Saudi Arabia, where he grew up. Yet he worked in a field that demanded truth and conviction, one he could not deny, being subjected to the Saudi government throughout his life. Once he was fired by the own government and then rehired to assist an ambassador. He relayed their repression and attempts at reform over the years that often failed. He was a correspondent for the Washington Post, a resident of the U.S., but was currently in Turkey, where he went to the Saudi Arabia consulate to try to get a permit to marry. He paid the ultimate price for what his words would reveal. His fiancée relayed what mattered to him in the New York Times. Now that he is fully suspected of being murdered, the world looks on to find out if it was destiny or a strategic murder by his own Saudi government. I'm going to read you a passage quick that he wrote in the Washington Post, in which he was a continual contributor. He was a very expressive writer, brutally honest, but his words came together with a full understanding of what it was like to be a dispossessed citizen of the Saudi government. So this is by Khashoggi, and he wrote it recently. When I speak of fear, intimidation, arrests, and public shaming of intellectuals and religious leaders who dare to speak their minds, and then I tell you that I'm from Saudi Arabia, are you surprised? With young Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman rise to power, he promised an embrace of social and economic reform. He spoke of making our country more open and tolerant and promised that he would address the thing that hold back our progress, such as the ban on women driving. But all I see now is the recent waves of arrests. Last week, about 30 people were reportedly rounded up by authorities ahead of the Crown Prince's ascension to the throne. Some of the arrested are good friends of mine, and the effort represents the public shaming of intellectuals and religious leaders who dare express opinions contrary to those of my country's leadership. The scene was quite dramatic as mass security men stormed houses with cameras, filming everything and confiscating papers, books, and computers. The arrested are accused of being recipients of Qatari money and part of a grand Qatari-backed conspiracy. Several others, myself included, are in self-exile and could face arrest upon returning home. By the way, the Qatari, I believe it's a independent government, they support 90% of the Al Jazeera network. It anguishes me to speak with other Saudi friends in Istanbul and London who are also in self-exile. There are at least seven of us. Are we going to be the core of the Saudi diaspora? We spend endless hours on the phone trying to understand this wave of arrests that has included my friend, businessman, and thoughtful Twitter personality, Issam Al-Zamil. It was just last Tuesday that he returned home from the U.S. having been part of the official Saudi delegation. That is how breathtakingly fast you can fall out of favor with Saudi Arabia. It is all quite shocking, but this has not been business as usual in my country. Their idea could change medicine, but they had to wait for technology to catch up. In 2003 and again in 2010, I was fired from my job as editor-in-chief of a progressive paper, Al Watan. During the years in between, I served as a media advisor to Prince Turki Faisal, the Saudi ambassador to Britain and then the U.S. Perhaps it seems odd to be fired by the government and then to serve it again abroad. Yet that is truly the Saudi paradox. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble reading. Yet that is truly the Saudi paradox. In the starkest terms, Saudi Arabia is trying to moderate the extreme viewpoints of both liberal reformers and conservative clerics, and the arrests span the spectrum. When would this climate of fear and intimidation be so prevalent when a young charismatic leader is promising long-awaited reforms to spur economic growth and diversify our economy? And his reform plan was supported by most of the 30 clerics, writers, and social media superstars who were rounded up in the middle of the night. Now, I'm going to stop there because we're only having a short show tonight. I'm going to briefly explain something, and then I'm going to play one clip of Jamal Khashoggi on the Al Jazeera network when he's describing the new leader, Mohammed bin Salman. The Saudi government used to be dispersed into three different groups, which were geographically disbanded, for lack of a better word. The importance of the Wahhabi fervency in Islam is what propelled Ibn Saud, the father of the seven leaders of the last 60 to 80 years, except for the newest nephew, I believe. He overcame the Rashidis. He found comfort in the Bedouins, and he retook the territory in Riyadh. The Saudi government has always been rather brutal and sword-like, and it's no surprise that they put to death a leader in journalism whom they did not want around. It's not even a surprise. They've been picking off people in the Yemeni's government for years, including arranging the death of King Saleh. I want to mention a few points about the United States. Trump mentioned in an interview with 60 Minutes just a few days ago that he will get down to the bottom of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, but he wants to protect American jobs with the $110 billion military deal with Saudi Arabia, including protections of jobs with Raytheon and Boeing. Now, Trump is a transactional president who has a transactional view of the world, but he cannot calculate military deals in terms of a major striking death of somebody who was walked into a consulate in a foreign country to get a marriage license and was perhaps slaughtered to death. He just cannot calculate profit on military hardware against those terms. France, the UK, and the German Republic demanded and expected a thorough investigation, and Trump's newer foreign policy advisors, Mike Pompeo and John Bolton, are pretty hawkish in their view of the world, but they all need to work together and negotiate to find out what happened to this man, as he was a U.S. resident and a major contributor to the Washington Post. Now we have four co-hosts on the line, and I'm going to play this brief clip by Al Jazeera on his, he is actually appearing in this video, Jamal Khashoggi, the one who was most likely killed October 2nd, and I want you to hear what he has to say.
Claims he's cracking down on corruption and championing women's rights is coming to the United States. Who's the real MBS? Who's the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia really on top of the gathering for the Lord. And it would be much better for him to allow a breathing space of music, corroding the traditional, corroding the righteous, corroding the air, to debate and to be empowered to limit the power of the religious establishment. I demanded that, and it is doing the right thing. But it is an important transformation that requires all of us to contribute to it, to discuss it, and no one should be jailed for it. When you say under MBS's rule, an interesting form of dictatorship has been created in Saudi Arabia. Ever since Saudi Arabia was founded, it has been a dictatorship. No, did that not bother you when you were working up with Saudi Arabia? The things you have done, like incentive, not the whole, not in the parliamentary system, but throughout the whole country. But as we speak today, there are corrupt intellectuals and women in jail. Now nobody is there to speak and criticize the result of their life. Okay? What's your response?
I'm going to pull in the co-host now. It's possible that Blog Talk Radio is only going to let us go 45 minutes tonight. I'll start. I'm going to bring in Mike first. He's been on the line the longest. Then I'll bring in Don and Wade. Good evening, Mike.
Yes, my dear Jane. How are you? And how are you to Don and Albert, John, and John, and everyone
so
else?
So far, it's only Wade and Don. It's Wade, Don, and me so far, and Ben said he'd call in. I would like to say that the headliner tonight, we're talking about Jamal Khashoggi, the possible freelance journalist, was most likely killed. Some people say by a saw, that he was hacked to death by a 15-member squad in the consulate in Turkey, by the Saudi Arabian consulate.
Yes.
Have you been following the story?
Oh, of course, I am as a journalist, too, and yes, of course, my dear. And yes, we know that the Turkish authorities, they have the audio and possible even a video of it as well, too. But up to this minute, we haven't seen released yet. Yes, also we know that Donald J. Trump said, well, I will look to the matters, but I love money. I love $110 million from fucking Saudi Arabian king. So therefore, we get the money first. We don't give a fuck what they have done. Go ahead, please.
Okay, I like your dramatic effect. But we can't use the F word too much because we might get censored on YouTube eventually. I was going to say that Donald Trump did advocate in his interview at 60 Minutes that money is the bottom line, as I said in the introduction. And the U.S. Treasurer Scott Mnuchin is still going to the Saudi conference this fall to discuss arms sales. So I think Donald Trump, as much as I seem like a critic for him, sometimes I appreciate his honesty, but he has to weigh the matter, human lives versus military sales. It doesn't add up, and he should be a little more cautious about his diplomacy. With that, I'm going to pull Don in next because he's been the second longest holder. Good evening, Don, and I'll get to Wade next. Hi, Don. How are you doing tonight?
Doing very well, Jane, everybody, Mike, John, Wade. So I'm just...
What's your first impression of the story, Don, on Jamal Khashoggi?
This is about silencing a voice, and everybody was in a sense, including the Turkish. He was coming up with some things that probably were going to be discriminatory not discriminatory, but they were going to be facts that were going to be against the Saudi regime. It's been, the Saudi regime has been going through a major catharsis. I know that I've mentioned several times that living here in Nevada, there is a whisper that the life is no the Highway 51 shooting was a conspiracy because they wanted to kill the Saudi prince when he was here. They own some of the
yeah, we
hotels.
Covered that story thoroughly. But one
right,
thing I want to note, right, I'm going to be pulling Wade in about 30 seconds. I want to note that I think this story was particularly disturbing for two reasons. One reason is Jamal Khashoggi did love his country, Saudi Arabia, and he did want reform. But secondly, in the technology era, you can't hide much. And like Mike said, there was an Apple Watch that recorded the incident that they haven't released to the public. And there's also Turkish video or possibly only audio coverage claiming that they know the truth about the death. So it's a centerpiece of the world in the sense that even if leaders are dictators and they run shoddy business relations for years on end, they are going to suffer for this because the world is watching.
Well, shoddy, I can't say that shoddy is a good word only because they happen to be the richest people in the world. So
well, the funniest
shoddy
thing about Turkey is Turkey can be assholes to their own people, but when there's a crime committed, when there's a crime committed in their own country, they're like flies on ointment. They go right away and try to thoroughly investigate everything. Like in that sense, I notice the Turkish government is very efficient. I'm going to pull Wade in now. Anyone can talk right now.
You were disconnected for 10-15 seconds, dear, just to let you know.
Oh, and also that audio that you brought in, I couldn't hear it. That was the biggest waste of 3 minutes on the show.
No, I played it on speaker. You guys, I don't want to spend time discussing this. We only have 45 minutes.
3 minutes.
Move fast tonight.
There you go.
Everybody fast.
It only takes one button to silence all of you. So can we run the show now?
We already know.
Hi, Wade.
Hey,
hi,
I'm
Wade.
On. Hey, guys.
Hey, Wade.
This is the I'm the Crown Princess of Minnesota, ready to set my own jihad.
Uh-oh. Wow, nice.
Well,
I heard jihad doesn't have to mean a bad thing. I heard it can mean like a, I don't know, some kind of cause or something. So that's good. All right.
Yeah, it actually means passion about a cause. It means passion about a cause.
Well, that can be a good thing. All right, good.
And I'm sure you know Black Wall Street also, too, that in June 2nd, 1961, the KKK ISIS attacked black people in that city and killed a lot of them and made homeless over 10,000 of them. So next time we should talk about Black Wall Street.
Less than a year ago
in Turkey,
it happened in the United States.
Say what?
Yes,
less than a year ago in Turkey, there was a big shooting in the airport.
Mike, go over what you're talking about again one more time, please.
Yes, sir. If you Google it, Black Wall Street, just put Black Wall Street, and it will show you that what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You know, people from Mississippi were all going to that city because the one rich black person got a lot of land and made supermarkets, houses, and everything. So then KKK ISIS I call them ISIS, KKK. They attacked them, and many of the people were killed. So this is United States. It's 1961. Go ahead, please.
No.
Pretty bad.
You got it. I wrote a screenplay, or started writing a screenplay about it. This is the equivalent to James' book. But I've started writing a screenplay about it, and it is a phenomenal story that nobody knows about because the newspapers hushed it up on purpose. But 332 people were burned out, burned out of their houses.
Yes.
It was all because a bellman at a hotel, the lady, he got a young lady and she cried that raped, more or less that she was going to be raped or whatever, and that's what was the catalyst of it. But they were very,
yes, sir.
The whites were very, very jealous of family and
black
all the families
success.
Who were getting with.
Black success, yes. And here, sorry, I have to correct
just
myself.
Just so you know, a lot of Saudi royalty, they live in Oklahoma and Texas.
Yes. It was 1921. Please, I do correct myself. It was in June 1st, 1921, Black Street, in Greenwood District neighborhood of Tulsa. Yes, sir.
It sounds like a lot of what, I mean, it's a great thing to bring up because there's just a lot of like mob reaction right now. And I hear people use the argument, well, you know, like you don't need proof if it's not a court of law. Well, if you're punishing someone, even if it's not the legal system, but you're going to punish someone, you better know, you know, like, so a mob attack like this event, this Black Wall Street, you know, that's still a punishment. And, you know, problem is, yeah, people just react in emotions and, oh, this guy did this and, they go after him, and I don't know how we're going to get the world to be sane and not act like that. And hopefully, I'd like us to get better about that.
I don't mind you bringing up a race riot in Tulsa from 1921, but you are getting off topic, and the show is about the Saudi Arabian dying and. In Turkey, and also Ben is on the line. I'm pulling Ben in.
Hi, Ben.
Good evening, Ben. How's it going?
Hi, Ben.
We were
talking about
Jamal Khashoggi's death. I read an excerpt from his editorial opinion piece in the Washington Post, which he was a very honest contributor to what was going on in his country, and he was a primary source. At one time, he worked for the government. And we also talked about how the Turkish government has audio and possibly video files they haven't released, and how this one possible death has shaken the world. Have you followed the story?
No, I heard something about it, but I haven't followed or read any articles at all. I did hear a couple of brief, you know, passing through. I heard somebody talking about it, but I didn't know if he was right wing, left wing, or who he criticized, or who his enemies were, or anything. So
it wasn't so much about political polarity. He was a self-exiled Saudi journalist who. He was a U.S. resident, but he traveled all over the world. He wasn't in one place at one time very much. He was engaged to a Turkish woman he met at a conference in May, and he was going to the consulate to get a marriage, potential marriage license, when he disappeared on October 2nd. So I have a question for any of the hosts that can answer, since we have to come up to speed now. We're already 25 minutes into the show. Do you guys think that this is a reflection on how the Saudi government normally operates? And how do you think it will impact foreign relations between Europe, the Middle East, and the U.S.?
Yes, Saudi Arabia is same as Khomeini in Iran, and Iranian government have done many, many things worse than the Saudi Arabia did right now. And yes, they are all murderers and dictators. And I would like you guys Google it, The President. Please see this movie, and I'm sure it is in Netflix by now. And it's it shows the, you know, imaginary that this is the you know, king that uses the child to always at evening he calls the main center, says turn off the lights, turn off the lights, turn on the lights, turn off. So, you know, it's just because the kid like it. So anyway, and then
well,
it shows
can
the,
I add
you know,
something,
people.
Mike? When this Khashoggi guy wrote a recent article in the Washington Post about the death of Yemeni leader Ali Abdul Saleh,
yes.
Basically Saudi Arabia had their thumb over that Yemeni's government for years, and Saleh was a fall guy for the Saudi government. He had death written over his head. He was killed by Houthi forces who were former allies of Yemen. He was. I just want to read one little section. It's only about six lines. What Khashoggi was trying to say in this article is that the Saudi government feared that another leader would get out of hand in the Mideast, and they couldn't afford that. Because then they thought people might be staking assassination against Mohammed bin Salam. But Salah, Yemen's former president, he was killed in the fall of 2017. He was sort of wily. He was a corrupt Arab leader that would have been deposed during something like an Arab Spring. But after watching allies and frenemies fall in Egypt, Libya, and Tunisia, the late Saudi King Abdul, who died in 2015, established a hardline position against any similar moves on the Arabian Peninsula. In the case of Yemen, Riyadh acted preemptively. Fears of instability on the southern border led Saudi Arabia to orchestrate a leadership change in that country. The Saudi-dominated Gulf Cooperation Council drafted an agreement with Salah to step down from power. Well, I'm not going to read anymore, but this is another piece that Khashoggi wrote about where he was trying to openly frame the Saudi government for what they were guilty of, which was Salah's death, the Yemeni's president. So he really didn't hold back or mince words during his time on Earth. So I would like we have five people on the line. I'm going to stop contributing now. In case our show gets cut off and you guys can debate whatever you want. I don't care if you bring up Tulsa, but I thought we should at least pay some homage to this journalist who most likely got slaughtered.
Yes, yes. Please see the movie Netflix 22 July, and next week we can talk about that if you like. And then another movie they show is called Error. Terror, but not terror. Space error. And that's a very powerful movie they made. And we can talk do you remember that guy whose limousine was crashed and killed 20 people? He was actually an FBI informant. And what he does, he puts people, into the trap that really, they are not bad people, but the way he presented, they are bad people. So many of them got 8 years, 10 years, 15 years in prison. So that's the movie Error, Netflix. It shows that that's a powerful movie, that all these people are clean, like me and you, but because, this guy... He's a crazy guy, and he's hired by FBI, and then put these people
Mike,
into
we only have 15 minutes
trap.
Left.
Mike.
I know.
We
go
only
ahead.
Have 15 minutes
yeah.
left, so you have to let others talk.
Sure. Go ahead, please. Sorry.
Don, Wade, or Ben, do you have a comment?
I'll try to learn about that. It's a shame when anyone is murdered, and you know, like journalists aren't fighters, so it is a shame. I don't know a whole lot about the details, but it sounds pretty horrific.
Well, journalists are fighters. They're basically a network of intelligence. They get information out, and a lot of times the information is detrimental to their health, and it takes really, you know, nervy people to be able to do the research and understand something that's wrong and then actually produce it, because that puts
good
their
point.
Life in danger.
Okay, yeah.
So I would
point.
I'd be curious to know what his content was that got him killed, because not every
well,
journalist.
Well, I've read two
for,
of his. I read half of his editorial about his own personal experience, and then I started reading the Yemenis article. Basically, he was a historical writer for the Washington Post, of course, with primary sources because he lived through it, and he basically told the truth. How reforms were being made, but yet there were failings and there were false arrests, and he was pretty brutally honest, but I wouldn't call him a radical. He was just a truth teller.
Right.
Also, there are three journalists.
He probably took a risk, though,
Nepal.
Going into Turkey. Like, if he was really concerned about his life, he could have hid out in the U.S., but he traveled all over the world, and he had friends in London and
mm-hmm.
Turkey and other places. So I don't think he was a scared person.
Well, look at how the news is allowing him, his story, to be published around the world. Statistically, the most dangerous place to be a truthful journalist is Mexico. I mean, they lose journalists left and right down there, and you never hear about it. You never hear their names. You never hear their
wow.
stories published. They just die. They get murdered, and sometimes it's brutal, brutal murders to make an example for other journalists. And that's our next-door neighbor. Mexico is killing journalists like no other country on earth.
They also killed several people running for public office in cold blood, like right in the street when they were posing with citizens. So you're right
yeah.
in that aspect. The only coverage I've seen of Mexico in the last 5 days was they were cleaning the streets from that hurricane. And that's all
yeah.
I've seen.
Unfortunately,
you're right, they never
yes.
cover stuff like that.
Yeah, they never mm-hmm. cover it. You know why? Because millions of people are homeless right now from North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, and Florida, and et cetera. And still, we haven't recovered from the other worst hurricane, what was Andrew, 4 years ago. And we haven't covered it. I mean, it's very unfortunate that, you know.
Well, one reason is maybe the Mexican government doesn't allow it. There's been over 10,000 people killed in Mexico this year, and we still have two more months to go. It's
yeah,
not just
I believe,
journalists and government officials, it's several other kinds of people.
Also,
yeah, but
Asia,
I believe
too.
I
Nepal
read
is
that
very bad.
I think it was 180, the last time I read about it, I think it was 180 people running for office down there were murdered. And that was just
yeah,
the last
I found
time I read
that
about
article
it.
Too. But during the summer, they were saying they were shot in cold blood in daylight.
Yeah.
And some were women. There's probably
yep.
been 40,000 killed in Mexico, but they had them categorized in 10,000 or more people killed per country, and they were
yeah.
in the top five most dangerous places in the world. But one reason is, I do want to say this, and I'll probably sound bad, but they're a second world country, There's a lot of death there for a lot of reasons, and even our Western Hemisphere doesn't really give a shit about Mexico, except for on a prudent level, like how much are they contributing to our economic system.
Yeah,
I don't
well,
think people care about
a,
Mexicans unless they are Mexican.
That's not true.
There's not a lot we can do. There's not a lot we can do for them. They don't allow us to help them. Unless it's financially, they don't want us in there to police to help them police their country. They have control, ultimate control over the country and the crime. So the crime has basically control over their government, and their government won't allow us to come help. So the only thing they want from us is financial aid. So that it makes it really hard to help somebody when you're sending money that's being used for corruption.
And you've got,
well,
you've got to understand,
that's true in a sense, but the guiltiness of the drug trade is on both ends. Go ahead, Don.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm, one of the things I was going to mention, because the drug trade is very, very lucrative through there because it's coming through America. A lot of Hispanics want to be Americanized. That's why a lot of them voted for Donald Trump. They want to be Americanized. They want to continue the culture and the history of the Spanish government, which is an elegant, relatively, well, it's corrupt, but it's relatively benign corruption, if you will. And so they want to continue, and, you know, the Spanish influence is, if not enormous, it's everything. They do have the Indian influence, but, of course, that has been smashed. So they want to be acclimated in a regular society. They don't want, but they're lost because the Spaniards cannot help them much anymore. So they're lost people.
They're so subject to so much power brokering, it's ridiculous. It reminds me of a line in my screenplay when they were talking about imminent danger, that they burned the draft cards because our American soldiers were in imminent danger going overseas, and the Vietnamese themselves were in imminent danger. And one of them compared imminent danger to being a Jew in Germany. The Jews weren't in imminent danger because they were being stalked by the Germans, but the fact that they were just a Jew, and the ultimate fate was they were going to die if caught by the German government. And that's kind of what it's like to be a Mexican. If you're not in the proper pecking order, or if you're a rural peasant, you're safe, but if you have anything at stake, you got a death mark over your head.
Yes, absolutely.
And every Mexican who crosses the U.S. border is willing to die just for 1 ounce of freedom.
But there's a large
also
number
Trump
of...
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, what I was going to say was there's a large number of the immigrants that are subverted by the Democrat leadership. If you've seen some of the videos of the big gatherings of Mexicans that are protesting the U.S. flag, they're waving the Mexican flag. So why would they escape from a country that is dangerous and gives them no rights and then come here and wave that country's flag here and try to gain office to change our constitutional rights? I just don't understand it, and I think the Democrat Party is pushing
that on. I think in some ways
on.
The Mexican loyalty is more of an innate pride of their own people that goes beyond the scope of government corruption.
And I think you have it reversed, Ben. What's happening is more like there are a significant number of them who like the dictatorial, they're used to dictatorial government control.
Mm-hmm.
So they come here and they like the present government. what's happening is, or what is that exactly that you just said? Because it's kind of the opposite.
Are you talking about imminent danger?
No, I'm talking about the reverse of the Democratic Party pushing the Hispanic leadership. They're giving them license, but the Hispanic leadership is a lot for a Republican or Republic values.
No.
Are you talking about North American Union?
I'm talking about North
American Union and AMERO is going to be the new money for United States, Mexico, Canada.
There's a lot of Republican Latinos well before Trump took office. I knew a lot of them in L.A.
And they just
got
stronger.
But that's not what's happening in California.
But California, everywhere else, Hispanic leadership is not, in the Democratic Party, is not that prevalent. That's what I'm trying to say. California is an exception. But you don't see Hispanics coming out of Arizona or Oregon or Washington, or he's got a couple coming out of Nevada here.
In Texas and Florida, there's more Republican people like Rubio.
Mm-hmm.
There's some major guy that's threatening in Texas. I'll have to look his name up.
Right. I guess what I was trying to bring up was videos that I've seen of politicians in California explaining that California was stolen from Mexicans, and they're pandering to the La Raza group, trying to get
the truth. That's the truth.
No, that's not necessarily the truth. It was a territory not necessarily owned by Mexico anyway. It was inhabited by Mexicans, but not owned.
Mexico, parts of Arizona, New Mexico, and Nevada,
Texas,
were stolen.
Texas
were
also.
Justified, documented treaty. They overstepped the treaty.
That's not relevant now. I mean, if you wanted to claim ownership of dirt, I mean, nowadays you could say that Ireland was taken over by Britain. They're part of the UK. So, I mean, that's not relevant nowadays. We have a country with borders.
It's
now.
Relevant. We
can't go back
in time.
But North American Union is coming. Whether Trump is in power or not, North American Union coming. Mexico, Canada, USA become one country. AMERO is going to be the money of the future. Yes.
Well,
I hope the other way, the opposite direction. I hope our states become separate countries.
But remember, we cannot say anything.
Yes.
The show might cut off in 1 minute.
Okay.
It's a warning. The show might cut off in a minute.
All right. Well, those are two great prognostications that we'll be one big happy family on the continent, or that we will be fragmented into tribes like Syria. So that's something to think about, and that's, I think, if the show ends, a great place to end it. We're going to have part two next week.
By the way,
we're not going to drop our borders between Canada or Mexico. And Canada is basically a subsidiary of the British Crown. So we're not going to let them take...
But
then...